Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you, and she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's MBL on PRM.FM this June 21st, 2016 edition, episode 95 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from the Mud Hut in southern New Mexico. Our thanks to Aprazin for his theme song contribution. You can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. It's a call-in show, so please give us a toll-free shout at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Today's show will focus on our dysfunctional loyalty to the dominant narrative in the variety of forms it comes in. Sometimes we challenge the narratives of our listeners. Our listeners are free to challenge us as well and have done so over the past 95 episodes. We suspect that this show, however, may push us all a little bit. Our topics are not really that comfortable here at NBL, so today we'll go outside our comfort zone and maybe a step or two beyond, as my friend Calvin likes to say. We are a small community here at NBL. Yet collectively, we are a clear voice in a chaotic world. Allow me to explain. I like zombie movies, Guy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I like zombies.
Yeah. Well, we got a whole planet of them. And I think zombie movies and all these apocalyptic movies that have really been around since the 50s are a representation of our culture that has an inkling of what's going on just beneath the surface. And one of my favorite zombie movies is World War Z, and not because it's a particularly good movie, but there's a particular scene in it that I think is worthwhile from a abrupt climate change, near-term human extinction, doomer point of view. And it's a movie that stars Brad Pitt, and it was out a few years ago. And Brad's character is Jerry, and Jerry is a much maligned UN investigator, United Nations investigator. And a zombie apocalypse breaks out. And Jerry is kind of brought into the fold to find the root of how this happened.
He's a radical.
So he is. He has unusual methods. So they send him out there, and he is to find out what the hell's going on. Where did this start? And so he goes. The first place he actually goes to is Israel, because the Israelis had the foresight to build a wall around Jerusalem before the zombies showed up. In other words, they knew.
Uh-huh.
And he wants to know how they knew. And so he meets with a high-ranking Israeli official. And this official tells Jerry that in the 1930s, Jews never imagined that they'd be put on concentration camps or on trains to concentration camps. In 1972, he says they never imagined that athletes of theirs would be murdered at an Olympic Games. And the month before October of 1973, when they witnessed Arab troop maneuvers and unanimously decided to do nothing, a month later, the Arabs almost pushed the Israelis into the sea. And so the official tells Jerry that's when they had to make a change in their thinking. And they came up with what they call the 10th person principle. And that means if 9 people in a room agree, it is the duty of the 10th to disagree.
Uh-huh.
And to take an alternative, you know, argument. In the case of the movie, the Israeli official that was talking to Brad's character, Jerry, was the 10th man. And the 9 people thought, well, maybe there's just some sort of outbreak of a disease that's, you know, we can control and, you know, get a handle on. But the job of the 10th person was to actually take it for face value that it's actually a zombie apocalypse,
uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah.
Which sounds crazy. And so he had to go and prove that. And what happens is, if your evidence outweighs the other nine, then the other nine fall into the fold and follow that particular evidence. If your evidence fails, then you fall back into the fold of the other nine.
Sure.
And that's how it goes. That's kind of how I look at our role as whatever you want to call us, people who follow abrupt climate change, people who know the consequence of near-term human extinction, doomers, whatever you want to call us.
Right. Collapse of civilization.
Collapse of civilization. We are made up of all different types of people. And I think, for me, I feel like that's sort of our role, whether we want it or not, mm-hmm. is that we kind of come out and say, well, you know, we're not going to fix this
right.
doing this, and we're not going to fix this at all, so what are we going to do differently?
Right.
And that's the pushback. We apparently don't have convincing enough evidence at this point or large enough numbers.
Right.
But if you would have told me the amount of people who were in our Facebook groups and other Facebook groups and following these things and following our show and other shows that are similar and talk about things like this 5 years ago, I don't know if I would have believed you.
Yeah, right. There would have been 12 would have been my prediction.
Right. Counting us.
Right.
10. So, that's so, kind of how I see our role.
All right. So we're going to start with... We're going to talk about a variety of topics, and each topic we'll start with what the dominant narrative tells us, and then in the spirit of Louis C.K., we'll consider the maybe part or the dysfunction part of the narrative. So let's have Louis C.K. set it up for us.
Competition in their brain of good thoughts and bad thoughts. Hopefully the good thoughts win. For me, I always have both. I have like the thing I believe, the good thing. That's the thing I believe. And then there's this thing. And I don't believe it, but it is there. It's always this thing and then this thing. It's become a category in my brain that I call, of course, but maybe. I'll give you an example. Okay, like of course, children who have nut allergies need to be protected. Of course. We have to segregate their food from nuts, have their medication available at all times, and anybody who manufactures or serves food needs to be aware of deadly nut allergies. Of course. But maybe, if touching a nut kills you, you're supposed to die. Of course not. Jesus. I have a nephew who has that. I'd be devastated if something happened to him. But maybe, if we all just do this for 1 year, we're done with nut allergies forever. No, of course not. Of course, if you're fighting for your country and you get shot or hurt, it's a terrible tragedy. Of course. But maybe if you pick up a gun and go to another country and you get shot, it's not that weird. Maybe if you get shot by the dude you were just shooting at, it's a tiny bit your fault. Of course, slavery is the worst thing that ever happened. Listen, you all clapped for dead kids with the nuts. For kids dying from nuts, you applauded. So you're in this with me now, do you understand? You don't get to cherry pick. Those kids did nothing to you. Of course, slavery is the worst thing that ever happened. Of course it is. Every time it's happened, black people in America, Jews in Egypt, every time a whole race of people has been enslaved, it's a terrible, horrible thing. Of course. But maybe, Maybe every incredible human achievement in history was done with slaves. Every single thing where you go, how did they build those pyramids? They just threw human death and suffering at them until they were finished. How did we traverse the nation with a railroad so quickly? We just threw Chinese people in caves and blew them up and didn't give a shit what happened to them. There's no end to what you can do when you don't give a fuck about particular people. You can do anything. That's where human greatness comes from, is that we're shitty people, that we fuck others over. Even today, how do we have this amazing microtechnology? Because the factory where they're making these, they jump off the fucking roof because it's a nightmare in there. You really have a choice. You could have candles and horses and be a little kinder to each other, or let someone suffer immeasurably far away just so you can leave a mean comment on YouTube while you're taking a shit.
We're going to start with a minor example, and then we'll move into the topics of interest. For example, of course recycling is good for the environment. Of course you're a terrible person if you don't recycle. Of course you are. But maybe if we made things with an eye toward durability, we wouldn't have to recycle at all. Maybe we could reduce and reuse durable devices, and then recycling would be recognized for the big cup of nothingness that it is. After we point out some of this culture's glaring inconsistencies, a discussion will ensue. First between the two of us, and eventually among all of us, including those of you listening. Remember, you can call in at 888-874-4888. Example number one. Of course, those who practice veganism, permaculture, and off-grid living are examples of environmentally conscious living.
But maybe these practices are simple negotiations with something that is non-negotiable. We live in agriculture. We live in industrial civilization. Everything that supports life requires a loss of habitat and life. If we want to help the environment, then I would suggest we first come to the truth of the situation we are in. The truth is, we are going to die. The truth is that life requires death. In our case, however, life requires massive amounts of death. This bothers many of us, as it should. We want to do something about it, which is admirable. The truth is, our choices at this point are to make us feel better. And that's okay. But essentially, what we're doing is ranking one practice higher than another on the saving the planet importance list. When we identify with this particular practice, it becomes dangerous. We become vegans, permaculturists, and even doomers. We begin to defend this identity with all our might. For example, some might rank voting as a best practice. Others don't drive or fly. Still others homestead. None of them are the answer. All of them can have a positive impact. However, zero of them are turning this ship around. I'm okay with vegans. I'm okay with their veganism. I'm not okay with veganism will save the world. I'm okay with protecting and fighting for animals' rights. There are countless ways to do just that. I'm not okay that someone thinks being a vegan, which requires industrial civilization, by the way, within our current living arrangement, is a solution. Being a vegan is a compromise. If it's a compromise, then more power to you. If you think we should all be vegan, then you're delusional. The only sustainable diet is the one we no longer have the skill set, or in many cases, the habitat for. I know one primitivist gatherer, and he's never met another in his 50-plus years on the planet. And by the way, he's been looking. We are not vegans, we are not permaculturists, or even doomers. Instead, we maintain a vegan diet, we practice permaculture, and we have no hope of escaping near-term human extinction. This is a slight difference in phrasing that may not seem like much, but it's a start to letting go of our loyalty to a label that only perpetuates a narrative that continues to play itself out. The question then becomes, should we pursue a vegan, off-grid, permaculturist lifestyle? No.
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 There is no should in this clusterfuck. People are shitting all over the place. You should do this, you should do that.
Absolutely.
There are only choices to be made that we can live with. Your choices may be different than mine. But as soon as we start playing the social environmental justice Olympics and begin ranking importance, then it gets ugly and loses its purpose. And its purpose, from what I can tell, is to make choices that touch upon our basic needs in a way that we think is honorable and feasible. Food we need, water we need, shelter to maintain body temperatures, Guy points out, a decent human community, and a decent non-human community.
Of course we derive satisfaction from taking what Buddhists call right action. And that's okay, as long as we remain unattached to the outcome, and another Buddhist principle. The outcome is that we all die, and that our favorite species is on the verge of extinction. In other words, of course we should take right action, if we believe in should. But maybe it makes no difference except to ourselves and the few people we influence.
Yeah, you know, I wrote an article this week, and it was titled, Dear Liberals, We Need to Talk. And the responses that I received, and some of them were almost instant, from friends, was...
Wait. You have friends?
Yeah.
You're not working at this hard.
I have three. That, do you have to live off-grid, basically, to get to the root of what we face? And I never mentioned living off-grid. I don't believe in the article at all. What people did was they'd read it, and then they read my bio below. And so they just assumed that, hey, this guy's off-grid. This is what he wants us to do. And all I was saying is basically, whatever way you get to the root of the situation that we are in, well, then you get there. You could be sitting on the fucking couch, for all I care, and get there. As long as you come to the place where you realize that you're not defending an identity.
Right.
And I get caught up in this too. I start to identify myself as a doomer or a radical. And then it becomes all about that. And it becomes a loyalty to that narrative. And then I ignore the flaws within that particular narrative.
Of course.
And I don't have to argue about those because I have all the right answers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get this all the time from people that, you know, well, I live off-grid. Well, so what? I'm not living off-grid because I think it's going to fucking change anything.
Right.
I live off-grid because it makes me happy.
Interestingly, I made the huge mistake of moving off-grid a long time ago,
right,
thinking, expecting that since I was a white man and a teacher,
right,
that people would follow.
Right.
Well, they didn't. It didn't change a thing.
No.
You know, the system grinds on. Nobody really paid attention. Oh, there's that dropout loser professor.
Right.
He just quit.
Yeah. And that was just a choice you made. You made a choice that the thing I need to do is to live off-grid. Some people choose to not drive anymore or walk everywhere. Some people choose to be vegan. Some people dive into the permaculture culture.
Or the primitive culture.
Or the primitive culture. And what happens, and all these people, by the way, are members of our particular group, whatever they, you know, we happen to be.
The Big Ten.
The Big Ten. And I see, generally what I see happening is we are all defending what we've chosen as to be the most important particular choice.
Right. Instead of defending the countercultural idea to begin with.
Right.
The idea that the mainstream narrative has problems.
Right.
We instead break in, we splinter so easily into these little camps.
Yeah.
Of my veganism trumps your primitivism.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, and there are plenty of primitivists and plenty of off-grid people and plenty of vegans that get the fact that their particular choice isn't going to save anything.
Right.
They get it.
Right. But then there are those that proselytize.
Absolutely.
You know, that show up at the door like Jehovah's Witnesses, no offense intended.
Right.
And think that they can save us, or at the very least, save me.
Right. And it usually follows, if we all did this.
Right.
Well, it would be different.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we have a caller. Angie from California on Nature Bats Last.
Hi.
Hey. What's up?
Hello. So I was thinking about a quote that I used to hear a lot, and I'm paraphrasing. It kind of goes, once you label me, you negate me.
Right.
Or label me. And basically it's about if you label someone a vegan or a permaculturist or a doomer, you place boundaries on that person.
Yeah.
So that's really not serving our collective, right? If you is people have to be labeled something. And anyway, I'm a vegan, but I don't like to, and I'm a doomer, but I don't like either of those labels. And I ride my bike because that sort of restricts me from changing my mind. Or are you all kind of getting what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. As a former teacher, the first time I gave this a talk similar to this, I talked about dysfunctional loyalty as being a teacher. Because when you're a teacher, at least in the realm I was, which was a public high school teacher, you could not criticize the profession, being within the profession, and you would face hell. And it was basically, from what I could tell, once I left the profession, was we were so caught up in the idea that we were teachers instead of people who provide instruction or who provide guidance, that we defended this title with everything that we were, that we were blinded to any of the flaws within our entire profession.
Right. Mm-hmm. And by, it's easy to put somebody into that box of other. And then once somebody becomes an other, they become not one of us, not like me. And we all obviously are comprised of all these pieces. So to call Angie a vegan when she's a vegan and a bicycle rider and she's a teacher and a librarian, she has all these other categories that she could be lumped into as well. To call her a vegan is to oversimplify her human beingness.
Yeah, and even that, we get caught up in that whole human-centric thing, like, okay, now we're human beings, and it's all about us in some level.
Right.
And it's a constant unraveling and constant reminding of that unraveling that I run into in my own daily life of not getting caught up in that particular identity, which is hard because it seems to me that this entire culture is about identity. So I don't know, you have a comment on that at all, Angie?
Exactly. And I need to go, but I just wanted to touch on that leave the labels for food, for something else, but don't hang a label on other people. And maybe think about even hanging a label on yourself.
Right.
Bye.
Thank you, Angie. Yeah, we're all very reluctant to have a label placed on ourselves, but we're really quick to put a label on somebody else because that's what we do. We're classification-oriented organisms.
Right.
We just do that very quickly. Ben from Chicago, are you still with us?
Hello.
Hey, Ben, you there?
Yeah, hi, I'm here.
You have a question for us or a comment?
I don't have my thoughts 100% organized, but I'd like to say that I agree with your doomer mindset to a large extent. But I don't let it limit my understanding that something can change. There's a book I'm sure you are familiar with called Limits to Growth, which kind of outlines a lot of how things are probably going to change very soon here. But it doesn't define human extinction. It just defines that population will decrease. There's also other things I'd like to mention, like the Venus Project, which propose alternative ways of structuring civilization. So I'm just curious, if humanity doesn't go extinct, how can you justify the doomer mindset, given the fact that humanity will likely live on, but the actions we take today will define like which species survive the post downturn way we're heading. So I'm just trying to say that I believe in the doomer mindset very much so, but to give up on changing the world, changing things through, you know, legal or illegal action. Like, I'm thinking of the Monkey Wrench Gang, a book that was brought up. Yeah, you know, I think that there's a fight ahead of us, and to just say, you know, doom, kind of loses the point that we should really be fighting for humanity and life in the universe. Like, I think your audience is very, should, I mean, I agree, it's difficult, but I think you have an audience, a captured an audience that's willing to do a lot. That's my question slash comment.
All right. Well, we'll comment on it. Thanks for the call, Ben, and you can listen to what we have to say about it. So I'll go first. I think the word doomer, first of all, and I'm not exactly sure of the origins or who's the guy or the woman who or person who labeled it as that. It gives people this idea of giving up, and so I think I think that in that way that label misrepresents at least, from my estimation, a large portion of the community that are doing things outside of the status quo. And that's really what we're trying to encourage here on the show. I think that as far as extinction goes, I think that when I mentioned the 10-person principle at the beginning, I think that's exactly what we're doing. It's rarely ever mentioned about humans going extinct. And so that's, as a 10th person, I think that's our job to go, yeah, hey, all species go extinct.
Yes, everyone so far that's been on the planet.
Including ours, and it doesn't help that we're the only species that's helping ourselves along towards it.
And taking 150 to 200 non-human species a day
right
down with us.
So I think that's our 10th person argument, is that we're going to go extinct, because we will, and probably sooner than people think, because, again, we're helping ourselves out.
Yeah, we're driving the ship as fast as we can.
Right.
There's a brick wall coming. We see it. Lots of people see it. You probably see it, Ben. You see the brick wall coming, and we're pressing on the accelerator. And anytime it comes up in conversation, what do? We press on the accelerator. That's what we're actually doing.
And then we hope somebody builds a ramp right before the wall in time.
Somebody else.
Right.
Not us. We don't have time for that. We're not in that kind of position of power. And thanks for bringing up Peter Joseph's Venus Project, which is just another way to maintain the set of living arrangements.
Yeah.
It's all city-based.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's a little different. It's a tad different. But really, it's all about cities and herding people into the cities and living within an accelerated, ramped-up version of the dominant paradigm.
And all civilizations have collapsed and gone away. Why is this one any different?
So far.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's kind of our role, is to point out that, as a community, this set of living arrangements, one, doesn't work, and two, is pushing us towards extinction, and if we continue it, well, we will go extinct. And quite frankly, we even took it a step further, we are going to go extinct much sooner, because we've passed some points.
We've passed many tipping points that guarantee human extinction in the not very distant future, because we will lack habitat.
And until the status quo can give me a better argument,
right,
which they haven't. All right, we have Dries from Philly. Dries, welcome back to the show.
Hey man, how you guys doing?
Great, man.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show once again. Listen, I want to be a 10th person again and disagree with you guys. Listen, I don't think that you guys are totally correct. I think we will survive, and we're going to science the shit out of this situation, as Matt Damon said on The Martian.
It's the last call we ever take for Chris.
Chris has jokes.
We're going to science the shit out of this, okay? But no,
I'm going to use your. I'm going to start quoting you.
And guys, you're
science the shit out of this.
And guy, you're not the captain, okay? I'm just joking. I saw the conversation that you had in Chico, and Just want to comment really fast on that, and then I have something that goes back to what you guys are talking about on this show. But I saw that the town hall guy, and what I was witnessing was it seemed like the stages of grief. I mean, I saw the denial, the reaction, because people just couldn't shudder to think that what you were saying is actually transpiring right now, and all, you know, despite all the data that you were, you know, you were referring to, all the data points that you were throwing at him. They just couldn't wrap their heads around it. And so once they got to that point where they were like, okay, he's hitting us with too many facts. I mean, it just seems to be this way. Then the anger stepped in. That's when you're not the captain, you're not the boss, and the Malcolm in the Middle conversation happened, you know. But not to poke fun at it, but again,
well, it's fascinating to see it live, isn't it, on tape?
Yes, yeah, it is. It definitely is. And I was just sitting back taking notes. I said, wow, this is how it goes. The going down the stage is a grief. I mean, I know that first stage is a tough road to get up. You know, like I said before, you know, denial's a motherfucker, and it is. It really is. But again, this is this seems to be the typical reaction of a lot of people that I've encountered. You know, and I've discussed. You know, I've had conversations about these topics with. They react the same way. It's denial and then the anger. And then a little bit of bargaining, and then they kind of, you know, sway off, you know. But getting back to the current topic about, you know, the identifying with a certain cause or a certain, you know, issue, or, you know, just labeling yourself one thing. I agree with you guys on that, to be honest, all jokes aside. But it reminds me of a saying. I'm trying to figure out who originated the saying, but you guys probably know of it. And this is something I incorporate into my own personal philosophy. I always say to myself, if you want to be understood, listen. That's it. That's what I do. If I want to be understood, I listen as much as possible. I try to understand every perspective that's out there just to get a better perspective on, you know, a better self, I guess, perspective on things, and just to be more understanding, be more in tune with my fellow humans, so to speak. But yeah, I just wanted to share that with you all as far as, you know, just my, you know, sharing pieces of my personal philosophy, what helps me get through, you know, these crazy days, you know, especially as they're getting crazy as we go down the line. But yeah, I just wanted to share that with you, and then just my observations from the Chico presentation. Again, I never miss a show. I try my best not to miss a show, and I appreciate all of the help and the good the good guys, so to speak, that you guys continue to give, and I'm one of your diehard fans. Thanks a lot, fellas.
Thanks, Dries.
Thank you, and you always have something intelligent and funny to say. And bear in mind that starting in a couple of weeks, we're going to be on the air only the first Tuesday of every month, so that leaves a lot of slots open for you, Dries. You want to start a radio show.
I'll be sure to tune in, and I'll have to forward my contact information to you guys, so that way we can kind of maintain communications, you know, around the times.
All my contact information is at naturebatslast@guymcpherson.com. You can just write me there. And
there's a link to my contact information, I believe, on his thing as well.
So. Yeah, that's right, there is. Just send one of us an email message, and we'll get in touch.
Yeah.
That line, by the way, is from the 2006 movie Babel. Which, of course, I haven't seen because I don't watch any.
Oh, it's Babel. It's the worst movie I've ever seen, by the way.
Really? You've seen it?
The movie should be called Really Bad Choices. I mean, it's one incredibly bad, insane choice after another.
But it has
another.
This great line.
It does.
That you didn't remember 10 years later.
I'm like, I can't believe I'm watching this movie. It's just like one mistake after another.
All right. So, the next, step number two. We made it all the way to step number two. Ooh. Oh, by the way, we should make the little announcement. At the halfway mark, you're listening to Nature Bass Last on the Progressive Radio Network. And this is a call-in show. Give us a toll-free call at 888-874-4888. Example number two. Of course, accepting near-term human extinction can set you free on many levels. Of course it can.
But maybe those of us in the acceptance stage aren't really in that stage at all. And that's okay. If we accept near-term human extinction, what is it we think we're doing? It appears from just personal observation that most of us are talking about it via abrupt climate change. This news set me free on an emotional level and a psychological level. It propelled me to, quote-unquote, chase a different carrot. Chasing a different carrot looks different and is different depending on one's circumstances and privilege. Are you chasing a different carrot? Are you moving towards the exit of dysfunctional loyalty? Are you fully aware that in this brief moment of time we call life, that nature will bat last? If you do, then embrace acceptance by exploring the multitude of possibilities when one gets handed a death sentence. And we've been handed a death sentence. No one here gets out alive, regardless of your views on extinction. Let go of expectations and live, is what Guy has always said. Are you moving towards the exit of the monetary system that enslaves you? Are you seeking authentic community outside of social media and the status quo version of it? Are you trying to live in the present instead of the what if that so many of us like to do, including doomers? I've seen very little evidence of people acting rather than just pontificating. Guy has said on numerous occasions that he walked away, as much as one can at this point, and no one followed. Well, I followed, and my wife followed. We discovered many folks who walked away decades before Guy or I ever did. Our friend and Uber Doomer, Sue Bullock, walked away. We took action, drastic action. It can be done, but we have to begin looking at our choices based on our personal circumstances. I know folks who did it with money and without money. I know folks who were highly skilled and those like me who had absolutely no skills.
I can tell stories about that, but we'll save that
That's
for another
a different
day.
Show, Guy. The one thing all of these people had in common was they stepped into their fear and came out of the other side and were rewarded by community, and not just human community, non-human community as well. Again, walking away, moving towards the exit, chasing a different character does not have to replicate what Guy, myself, or anyone else has done or is doing. Your circumstances will help guide you. We will help guide you, just as countless others have guided us. It's been called a transition movement, but I prefer to call it a resistant movement, which can lead to a real sense of liberation. I have found that liberation in my short time chasing a different carrot.
All you really have to accept is that birth is a lethally transmitted disease that is proven lethal in every case.
Right. Whether or not
it's
you,
a sexually transmitted disease.
Whether or not you follow Guy's work or not, you're not getting out of here.
Right. Life is short. Few people have taken the kinds of radical steps we have taken. Of course, people are afraid to take these steps. Of course, indoctrinated since birth into a fear-driven culture gone mad, people shudder at the thought of change. As Bill Clinton used to say, people like change in general, but not in particular. Clinton was referring to a citizenry claiming to want to throw out all the politicians and then re-electing nearly all incumbents. But the sentiment applies much more broadly. We all claim we want change, and hope for that matter, but we really want an easy life in which others make changes that benefit us. Of course we want change. Of course hope is unimpeachably good. But maybe change starts with each of us. Maybe hope is, as Nietzsche says, the worst of evils, for it extends the torments of man. Maybe hope is wishful thinking that negates our own personal responsibility. Of course we are not telling you to walk away from your own privilege. But maybe it's actually a good idea.
All right.
We have a caller, Pamela from Milwaukee. What do you got for us?
Ooh, I love Milwaukee. You there, Pamela?
Did I pontificate too long and I ran you off?
Bummer, because I was born in Milwaukee. No.
She's gone. Apparently she heard you say Milwaukee was a good town, so she hung up right then.
It's the city of festivals, Guy.
Really?
There's a festival like every weekend in the summer.
I should point out that this is something I forgot to say at the opening of the show when I started with that recycling example. Yeah. Today's National Recycling Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we're going to fix it.
Did you recycle today?
No, I did not.
You son
I recycle
bitch.
Every day. Every day is recycling day. Okay. Example
right.
number three.
All right.
Let's move along. Of course, voting for president is the least we can do to alleviate suffering.
But maybe voting for a sociopath or a psychopath isn't addressing the root and just prolonging and promoting massive suffering. This is another form of dysfunctional loyalty. This is another way of making ourselves feel better within a predicament. A politician encouraging us to vote should have been our first sign. Now, if you're a doomer and you accept the predicament we are in, then I'm completely lost. What helped create this situation is the very thing a vote validates. Our loyalty to the dominant narrative that has been pounded into our skulls since birth kicks in automatically, it seems like, every election season. Our common sense fails us. Choosing between two pieces of shit doesn't get rid of the smell. Our loyalty to the political narrative can begin to unravel by simply not participating in it. But doing that seems nearly impossible for a lot of folks. It can only be dismantled by taking this first step. One does not overcome drug addiction by using and then changing while high. They stop participating in such activities and then begin to dismantle their need and want for it. Voting is not a solution. Not voting, at the very least, shows resistance to participation and, more importantly, validating our political process. If we really believe that this system is evil, then why do the one thing that shows absolute loyalty to it? Besides, it's quite a leap of faith to think our vote is actually being considered on many levels. Even if it is, it's clearly not the only level that matters, which is maintaining the biosphere. Of course, couldn't one argue that that's the same logic somebody in permaculture or a vegan uses or somebody off-grid? Why participate in the process? Choose an alternative measure. Except the alternative measure of being a vegan or living off-grid is still supported by the industrial model. Being a vegan requires industrial civilization of growing, importing, exporting, shipping, buying, selling our food. Not voting simply requires us not to show up. Living off-grid isn't the off-grid of our ancestors. It requires fossil fuels. Permaculture is a fantastic area to pursue, except I'm not aware of one permaculturist in the entire industrial world who is completely free of the industrial model. There is no way out. There are only choices, only compromises, only negotiations, only ways to move towards the exit but never reaching it, only ways to chase a different carrot. What will your choices be? My most basic choice is to avoid validating the head of the monster that rules the machine.
It was George W. Bush who pointed out early in his first term that we're addicted to oil. Under his administration, the wars for oil continued. Because if you're addicted to oil, you have two choices: kick the habit or get more of the drug. We've chosen the latter. And it wasn't only the administration of the nefarious shrub, either. Based upon his actions, the current president is the worst one in my lifetime. Of course he is. How could he not be? His administration is responding to the demands of the citizenry, to us, constantly needing more, because all we really need in this culture is more. Of course we need more. That's the basis of civilization, as pointed out by Edward Abbey years ago with this line, quote, "Civilization, like an airplane in flight, survives only as it keeps going forward," end quote. Of course we must support civilization by demanding growth and electing presidents. But maybe this isn't the only way to live. Maybe we can learn to differentiate wants from needs. Maybe we can chase a different carrot, even if it means walking away from a tiny bit of our privilege.
All right. Pamela, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, Pamela from Milwaukee.
Well, I had to call in before you go to your once a month to say thank you so much for this show and the website and your time. I have to say, my little corner of Milwaukee and my community, there are a whole lot of people who care to have an in-depth conversation or ponder the elements of near-term human extinction, climate change, or even the vast array of, oh my God, the outward mainstream media nonsense that the mainstream show.
Right.
It's like what I call it now. And, you know, excuse my French, but this election is like a fuck show. It's like, it's hilarious, and it's probably what we deserve. I think I can say fuck on PRN, can't I?
Yeah, you can.
Good.
Fuck yeah, you can.
And are you familiar with James Howard Kunstler?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, and I figured you would be. I've loved his writing for a long time, and I had an opportunity to hear him speak once not long ago in Wisconsin. Well, actually, it was probably 8 years ago. And he was extolling how the only way to move forward is to move to the cities, move to the cities, move to the cities. And I had just moved from San Francisco, and I thought, there's no way you could survive 5 or 6 days if and when and when and
right.
when they run out of water. And
is that not
when,
a win?
So, as I see it. But, so, really, just wanted to call and say I'll miss your weekly show, and thank you for all that you've taught me and given me an outlet for this inquisitive place I go that's really lonely sometimes. In fact,
yeah.
People get downright hostile.
Right.
They don't want to have a conversation. They want to go shopping. Well, yeah, you get death threats. I just get shunned.
I just get people to roll their eyes at me.
Yeah, I get a lot of eye rolling. I get people lately who just want to commit me.
I want to be committed. Are you kidding? Three hots on a cot? Commit me right away.
It's the best way to be in a city.
Absolutely.
And be in a city.
For years, I have had this idea of also doing a Straw Bale House. And really, it was listening to you and your show, Guy, that, I mean, while I would still love to do that, and I'm in this bizarre middle ground of a suburban place, now I feel like that's all just going to cost more money, more resources, more... I mean, of course it'll cost my energy. That would be fine. That would be just fine. But I can't... I don't think there are enough people who still talk to me who would help me build my own Straw Bale House, although I could do a yurt. But it's damn cold here in the winter.
It is. I mean, I live in a yurt now, and I'm from Wisconsin. I grew up in Milwaukee. And you could pull it off if with a wood stove in the winter. It'll be a little steamy in the summer because of the humidity there. But it's a cheaper way to go than building a straw bale house. And I guess the question I would have for you is, do you think ultimately that moving from where you live now into a straw bale house, are you going to be any happier living in a straw bale house? I mean, that's what you'd have to answer, I think.
And while you ponder
chickens,
that...
But I don't think I could eat any of them. But they'd be great friends.
That's great.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, thanks for the call. You can call in every month if you're going to compliment us like that.
Yeah. All right. Who we got next? We got Josh from Seattle. Josh, you there?
I think it's me. I'm a big fan. Yeah, big fans of you guys. You're like horrifying, liberating messages. I was with my dad the other day, and we were discussing various quote unquote doomer issues, and he was like, "Don't you find that depressing?" And I'm like, "Yeah, but there's the liberating side too." So I had a couple just questions, comments, and I'll take off the air. What is based on my like gut instinct and some reading on psychological science recently, my view is that underlying fear of non-existence, fear of dying, drives the myriad of, you know, predicaments that we're in, the actions that we're causing that lead to those, and thus accepting as well the ultimate downfall of our cells and our species is driven by that lack of fear. Sorry, that fear itself. And the other disparate topic is, you know, with over half the world's population living in cities now, and about 80% in the U.S. living in cities, it seems unfeasible, while, like, very romantic or appealing to have us all kind of move to a more, quote, rural life. But wouldn't that further speed up the destruction of the open spaces, if you will, beyond what we're already doing with abrupt climate change? So those are my two questions.
Okay, well... We'll talk to you off the air, so to speak. The first one, when we had Stephen Jenkinson on about death and the whole psychological aspect of not existing anymore, and the fact that I think he pointed out that people fear that they'll be forgotten.
Right, this notion of a legacy, purely human concept.
Right, right. And so I think that's a real thing that drives our choices, like Josh has mentioned, that, you know, the choices that have led to our predicaments is trying to push, you know, kick death down the road. You know, we're going to upload our consciousness and we'll still be around. And we don't know what happens after death. So I think that unknown is part of the fear, for sure. And then the second part about, you know, people moving from the cities into the open spaces, yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we surely don't need populations of 15 million people, like everybody leaving Mexico City or everybody leaving New York City or everybody leaving Tokyo and filling every space. All it's going to do is create, you know, a mega, mega, mega city.
Yeah, but I mean, what some people fail to realize is that living in a city, you still use the same 2 or 3 or 6 acres that you use when you're living in the country. You just aren't living on it.
Right. It's just somewhere else.
Right. Somebody is growing grain on that on that area so that you can eat. Yeah. Somebody is, there's water being produced in that area that you can drink. So it's not as if people who live in the city have a smaller ecological footprint than people who live in the country by definition.
Yeah.
No, that all comes with a whole bunch of choices that are made along the way.
Right. All right. We have Matt from Florida. Matt, you there?
I'm there, Mike. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. But got a comment question? What's up, Matt?
Mike, I've been really working on this labeling thing, and as soon as I made a personal commitment to the removal of self-deception and a desire and a commitment to self and other honesty, that turned me into a scientific truth believer, which took just a tiny bit of scientific mathematical research to become a peak resource allocationist. And after seeing that peak resources are happening in so many different critical areas, that turned me into an ecological doomer. And once I became more aware of the ecological thing, I realized that the major problem was industry, so I became an anti-industrial civilizationist. And once I realized that civilization was such an amazing problem that was intractable, I became an abrupt climate changer. And then, after really, really understanding Guy's work, the final conclusion was that I am now a near-term human extinctioner.
And, it took you long enough to get there. Lots of steps along the way, man.
Matt, you're just an organism.
You don't need to label yourself.
That was great, by the way.
Yeah, that was very good.
I have validity. You now can put me in a category that really covers it all. And they're all related in an interrelated system that, of course, we can't change. And what I think is really great is the realization that we are born with these monkey brains. And they're so smart. Oh, geez, these monkey brains can figure out complex systems issues, and they can take care of nuclear power, and they can figure out about long-term trends. Our monkey brains are so well-suited for all of this society that we've created. It's just an amazing miracle that we've gotten as far as we have without blowing ourselves up. But I was really listening to you guys, and I said, you know something? I'm entertained, and I listen to you guys because I like the actionable information you have. It's like at the end of the day, you listen to the two of you guys, and you say, there was some really good actionable information. It's just one of the actions is dying. You know, it's like finding a really valuable diamond in the rough of, you know, oh, here's this scientific genius and this incredible commitment to the benefit of all living beings. And what do we got here? We got, well, there's not much you can do about this. You're really just going to have to, you know, go through this. So I was playing frisbee golf with a couple of investment geniuses back in Colorado, and these guys were professional full-time investment specialists. And at that time, I said, you know, they were asking me about the climate change because I was talking it up, and they said, oh, really, should we buy Coke? Should we buy Coca-Cola? Where really, is that the stock to buy given this information? We need actionable information here, guys. We want to find out what I need to buy in the stock market right now based on the information. We need some timelines. This is the new direction. The new direction of the show. You're going to buy once a month. It's all actionable information. Get up in the morning, buy the stock. Everything will be okay.
Love it.
Thanks, Matt. We're going to have to go now. We need to wrap the show because we find ourselves at the end. Sorry we didn't get to that last caller, Mark from Texas. Maybe we'll catch you next week. I hope so.
All right. Climate update?
Yes, we have a few minutes for a climate change update. According to a paper in the June 13th, 2016 issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, atmospheric aerosols strengthen storm clouds, thus leading to extreme weather. An abundance of aerosol particles in the atmosphere, constantly added through industrial activity, can increase the lifespans of large storm clouds by delaying rainfall, thus making the clouds grow larger and live longer, and producing more extreme storms. I've added this information to feedback number 21. As I reported more than 6 months ago, methane release from shallow lakes and ponds is occurring at an accelerating rate even during winter. Adding to that information, which is found in feedback number 28, is the bottom line from the abstract of a paper published in the June 16, 2016 online issue of Geophysical Research Letters. Quote, our findings indicate that permafrost below shallow lakes has already begun crossing a critical thawing threshold approximately 70 years prior to predicted terrestrial permafrost thaw in northern Alaska.
Ruh-roh.
70 years faster. Like we haven't heard that one before.
Right.
So this next tidbit, you want to know about the definition of stadial. Stadial simply means a period of cooling. Interstadial refers to a period of warming. According to the abstract of a paper in the June 17th, 2016 issue of Science Advances, quote, the causes of late Pleistocene megafaunal extinctions remain contentious, with major phases coinciding with both human arrival and climate change around the world. The Americas provide a unique opportunity to disentangle these factors as human colonization took place over a narrow time frame. But during contrasting temperature trends across each continent, we identify a major megafaunal extinction phase 12,280 plus or minus 110 years ago, some 1 to 3,000 years after initial human presence in the area. Although humans arrived immediately prior to a cold phase, the Antarctic cold reversal stadial, megafaunal extinctions did occur until the stadial finished, and the subsequent warming phase commenced some 1 to 3,000 years later. The increased resolution provided by the Patagonian material reveals that the sequence of climate and extinction events in North and South America were temporarily inverted, but in both cases, megafaunal extinctions did not occur until human presence and climate warming coincided, end quote. From several different sources comes the fact that May became the 13th consecutive month to break the record for global average temperature. May of 2016 was about a quarter of a degree Celsius hotter than May of 2015. Bear in mind that the average temperature of Earth has increased about 1.5 degrees Celsius during the last 265 years since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution.
All right. Well, thanks, Guy. That about puts a bow on it for this week's show. Make sure to like our Facebook page. It's Nature Bass Last on Progressive Radio Network. Join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bass Last on PRN.FM. And please post questions you'd like us to address in the show. Please share the link widely when we post it. And also continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. And you can find my work every Sunday in the Good Men Project. We'll see you on the radio next Tuesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern. And we will talk with, actually, one of the founders and longest-serving editor of The Onion, Scott Dicker. So
The Onion?
The Onion.
Yeah. For real, people. We're not just making this up. No. It's not sarcasm.
And he contacted you.
Yes,
so.
He contacted us and said, I want to go on the show.
Right on. So it's it'll be next Tuesday. Until next time, remember the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end,
nature bats last. Swinging, she bats last, and she's just about taking.